Hi, and welcome back to a new episode of the Desi VC podcast. I'm your host, Akash Bhatt, and each week I speak to operators and investors building companies and investing in them in India. Well, today on the podcast with me is Suneet Gajbiye. He is the Chief Business Officer and the co-founder of FinancePeer. Here on the podcast, we're now lately exploring a number of unique themes. And one of the things that we haven't done so far more explicitly and going into deeper detail today is around fundraising from a founder perspective. Now, fundraising can be very challenging. It can take anywhere between 3 to 6 months for an average founder to go out and raise funds on their own. And today with me on the podcast, Suneet is going to sit down with me and talk to me about all the different stages of fundraising that the company has been through so far, all the way from pre-seed to seed to series A and B. And once the founders raise the capital, it's really interesting to see how they deploy them. And today, we sit down and discuss how FinancePeer has been able to do so from their own fundraising perspective, and more importantly, what Suneet can offer all of our other founder friends out there in the industry to think and learn about the whole fundraising process. So without further ado, here's Suneet. Suneet, welcome to the DCVC podcast. It's a pleasure to host you today, and I'm really looking forward to learning a whole lot about your own personal experience with FinancePeer, and more importantly, you know, how the last 24 months have been and how the following 24 months is going to look like for the company. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks a lot, Akash. I think the pleasure is equally mine. I'm looking forward to our interaction too.
Well, for all of our listeners who are learning about FinancePeer for the first time, I'd love for you to just give us a quick overview of the company, and how did it come into being?
So FinancePeer, for all the listeners, is a company based in India. We focus on making quality education accessible to the masses, and how can the entire experience be rewarding? So simply put, that's what we do. So it's you could look at it from an impact for education vision perspective. When we started FinancePeer, so there are four of us, there are four founders, including me. When we started the company, it was a peer-to-peer lending NBFC. That's how we started as. In India, we registered it with RBI as an NBFC P2P. And then subsequently, RBI had certain regulations around it. The way peer-to-peer NBFC works is very simple. We connect lenders to borrowers. And as a platform, there is a revenue that you make on top of it. Now, what happened is that we met across our first client, the way we call it, a school, Mussoorie International. It's based in Dehradun. I think it's one of Asia's top girls' day boarding and hostel institutions. When we met with them, they highlighted a very unique challenge to us that the parents, they need a way to pay fees. And is there something that you can do about it? And we thought that, hey, we are not an infrastructure loan company, we are a startup. So that would be a huge risk for us. So what do we do here? And then when we went back to the drawing board, we came up with a very interesting solution where we went back to Mussoorie International, told them that, you know what, we will give you X amount of loan and what it will benefit the parents and students, it will be a zero cost interest, zero interest based EMI option for them to repay their fees instead of them paying to you either at one shot or in 6 months semester wise. And it clicked, it worked. Parents loved it. So if they had a fee of about 8 to 10 lakh INR, they just had to pay divided by 10 into 10 months. As simple as that. Of course, there's a business model around it. That's how we started. And that was the genesis of the new FinancePeer. That is when we took a pivot, 2019. We started with the first institution in Mussoorie. And then within that year itself, we got to associate with 30 or 35 schools. And then it was a journey ever since 20, even when COVID hit, we were still growing. So today from there, 2019 and to now, we are associated with more than 10,000 institutes across India, which includes schools, colleges, even your alternate learning segments, if anyone wants to learn online. So the concept is very simple. If my daughter wants to learn anything, FinancePeer is the best way for her to pay fees because it makes my life easy and it is rewarding also for her and me.
So how did you think about the whole fundraising strategy? Let's talk about the seed round and when that initially began for you, for you all. Okay. And how does the subsequent round, the A and the B, kind of propel the company in its mission in terms of hitting its targets and where it wants to be in the future?
So the way we looked at this was we mapped stages of how we are ensuring that FinancePeer grows versus what is available in the market in terms of fundraising instruments. Okay, so that is what we were looking at. So from a pre-seed or a seed to moving to a Series A, it was about when do we need a particular set of funds. And I think for any startup, what is more important is why do they need those funds? When do they need it and who to take it from? So once we had our map ready of how we are growing, where do we see ourselves at a seed stage? Is the product market fit done? Are we ready for growth? And now we are looking at, are we ready for scale? So when these stages are sorted, that is when we work with the market, with the fund VCs and with the angels to understand where we can fit them. So fundraising definitely is important, but for first generation entrepreneurs, it is more important to start early because it takes time for the cycle for funds to be realized and how you can utilize them. So starting early was important for us. The first set, we were able to reach out to some angels. We were able to convince them. We started involving them more in terms of mentorship, in terms of channel distribution where we can. That is why they were important for us.
Could you talk about that a little bit more? Because I think a lot of founders today are, either they do it well or they don't. And they get a good set of initial angels who come on board, who they want from their perspective to add value to their to the company and the growth, but unfortunately are unable to leverage that in the right way. So could you highlight how best can founders leverage their angel network, especially when their initial set of angels who are either strategics or value adds in that initial phase of the fundraising growth?
Sure, Akash. In fact, in our case, the product was new. Okay? So it was not that the market was well established. So we definitely needed the initial set of angel investors to help us in terms of guidance, in terms of channel distribution. That would reduce our overall cost of operations further. So the first few set of angels and seed funds that we got were from folks who understand education as a space, who understand how institutions, schools, and colleges work. To the extent that we had regular discussions with them on a weekly basis on a committed time that they could give us. In terms of business, these are the institutions, what can we do for them? Similarly, for any other founder, for their channel too. So you could either spend for user acquisition or you could use your network, correct? So we relied on using the network and kept our costs low using these angel investors. And that helped us build trust with them. At the same time, it helped us to build entry exit options for a set of investors and for the new set of investors to come.
That's a very good point that you made there in terms of just segregating your investors and trying to understand how best they bring value to the table. Now, we've talked about angel investors. I'd like to talk to you now about the seed stage particularly. And I want to split that question into two parts. So from a founder perspective, when you're looking to raise capital at the seed stage, what is really important for you and what are you looking for? And how do you go about shortlisting the right set of investors who can come and be part of your journey? And the second part of that question is then how do you utilize that capital, especially at seed stage?
So the first part of the question on who and how. Right?
Yes. How do you go about with the whole fundraising strategy?
Right. So as I said, we have a growth plan in place. How do we reach to a product market fit, to growth and to scale?
Right.
Now, if I look back at it, of course, the timeline would have been stretched or reduced by a few months, but we did hit our mark.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the seed stage, we started. So as an ecosystem, for FinancePeer and for any other company, understand the players in the ecosystem that you're working with. For us, it was technology, it was demand, schools and colleges, and it was the lenders and the supply that is available. So the investors that we would want them strongly to be connected to either of them, either the supply space or credit. Are they being strong there and understanding how operations, credit and supply work? Either be strong on the tech platform that we are creating, where we can receive product and tech guidance on mentorship and how to build because it has been done before, or either on the business distribution channels in terms of schools and colleges. I think for every founder, it is important to understand if in any core parts of the business or the product or the credit for a fintech, if the investor can help him, those would be the right set of investors. If they are unable to, then I would say at least try to focus that more than 30 or 40 or 50% of the people on the cap table, they have some connection with something that you're doing in the core.
Right.
So that is the primary criteria for me. I would choose that. Then a way for them to add value. Not every investor has the time. Not every angel has the time. How much time can they actually spend with you?
So do you ask that question before they invest or after when they've already committed to you, they already shared their value add with you? And is it that at that point you kind of like try and evaluate how much time can they actually offer you? Like somebody while investing would perhaps say, you know, we're happy to sit down with you once or twice a month and think through this thing. And we'll dedicate a person on the investment team or on the support team, on the platforms team who can then help you with certain connections with the industry. And then your point of contact changes from the person who invested in your company to the platforms team, especially if it's a larger fund and they have these people on their team. So when do you have that conversation with that investor and how important would you say has having that conversation, understanding expectations and leveling that with that investor who's already part of your cap table?
Correct. So interesting point here. So first of all, I cannot talk about this to the investor before they invest it for a very simple reason that the investors are investing in the team. They are putting money on the team as to why they can do it. So this is the time when we try to work with the investor to understand how passionate are they about the problem that we are trying to solve. Once we understand that there is passion, and it is not just about the money, that is when we start to engage with these conversations.
Right. But it's also not true, right? You can obviously sit down with your investors before they invest and perhaps even ask them, like, how do you see yourself fitting into our journey? Like, where is that support that you can perhaps add to us? Because, you know, we have, especially if a company like yours, you know, who've perhaps had some very interesting investors wanting to be part of the cap table, there's obviously investors today fighting out to get a share on some very fast-paced growth companies. It's a founder's market. I mean, we can debate on the current market right now, but at least when you raised your seed round, it was a very competitive market at that point. So you could have asked that question. So why did you say that you perhaps may not have been possible to ask that question previously?
Correct. So the way I put it is, I didn't directly put those questions in place. I tried to judge the parameters on which I could set up a platform where the relation becomes stronger.
Got it.
So the way I'll put it is, let's say that I want a particular investor. I know that this investor has a strong channel network and can help me in the business aspect in terms of acquiring a set of clients at a lower cost. And you already know these things. It's not that you don't know when you're talking to the investors. Understanding whether the investor is committed to the team and the vision is more important at that stage before asking what the investor could be a part of.
Got it.
So that is the vision of the way I was thinking and the way I still think. First is alignment on the vision. If the investors feel the same way we feel for the problem.
How do you gauge that, Sunit? Because one of the things that I find challenging, say for instance, you're perhaps a senior associate, you're a principal at a fund, they may have bought into the idea. They may have obviously loved the founders, the problem that they're solving, the solution that's at hand, but they still have to sell it to their IC during that investment conversation. So even though you and the person leading that deal on the fund side may have a good fit,
perhaps the senior executives and the IC does not feel that this is a great opportunity. So how does that then translate to a relationship between you and the person that you're having a conversation with? And does that then leave sour taste in your mouth if the IC decides to not go ahead for whatever reason it is? How do you then manage that relationship? So, I guess this is more of a question for an investor, but also at the same time, I think founders want to keep in touch with certain investors who they think they can benefit from. Because if there's a person, let's say, who's a principal at a fund in the education space, who perhaps has worked previously in the education sector, who has a lot of good connections, while the IC has decided not to invest in the company, this person might specifically turn out to be very helpful for you with the connections that they've previously promised that they can open doors to. So how do you manage that relationship? Should such a case arise, or has this even happened to you in the past?
So in my case, we did not face this at a seed stage. There are a list of VCs out there. Yeah. For them, we would be their anti-portfolio. But in my case, at the seed stage, the investors that we had were either one of the core areas in terms of credit or in terms of business or in terms of tech. Mm. So these were a few NBFCs, a few international groups, and yes, a few angel funds who came in. So those were the people who came in at the seed stage for me.
Okay.
So with these people, it was more about them aligning to the vision, aligning to the team, and then taking it ahead. Yes, the problem that you mentioned, that came for us in Series A and in Series B, not at the seed stage. Mm-hmm. Over there, you rightly pointed out, if a case has to be built, it is going to go step by step.
Right.
So from a Series A and B perspective, yes, it is about case building.
Yeah.
So from a VC, where are the funds? And in the past year or in the past quarters, where is the focus of the funding?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So every time a VC raises a few series or a set of fund and they have a new set of funds coming in, it is important to understand their vision.
Mm-hmm.
If as a company, you are there in their vision, then it's a right fit.
Mm-hmm.
If at that particular stage, if you're not there, then I think just being at that level, maintaining the relationship, and if there is a fund where there's a requirement for allocation in a particular area, that would be the right fit. I think many of the early stage founders, even we did a mistake at early stage, they miss this. They miss this. We are unable to understand why a particular associate or even a partner is being able to help us, but why things are not going through. It's not that... many a times they are not aligned to the vision. At times it is only about timing.
Correct.
At times it is only about timing. Hence it is important to be in touch, because it happened even with us. Same set of folks who couldn't make it to a particular round did make it to the next round.
But that barely happens, right? I mean, okay, perhaps when you talk about a seed stage, yeah, some seed stage investors turn out to be Series A investors. And perhaps some Series A investors may invest in a Series B, but that's kind of where the buck stops. You don't really find a lot of Series B investors investing in growth stage, which is like C and D. So that jump is, I mean, it depends on the fund. And if you're looking at a micro fund, typically they'll only invest in pre-seed and seed. They might not even do their A. So when you're talking about the fact that some of them did come back for the next round, those are the ones whose fund sizes were perhaps slightly bigger. And who had an allocation at two different stages so they could invest. But when you're looking at, say, a seed stage, and perhaps this seed stage VC fund, micro VC fund, is not able to participate in a Series A, but you still know that this is a fund that can perhaps add value, how do you then make an effort from your side to continue maintaining that relationship? Because from a fund manager perspective for the VC, them spending a little bit amount of time that they can perhaps be spending with their own portfolio companies while they haven't invested in yours may turn out to be counter beneficial or counterproductive from their perspective. So you do know that this person can still help you out. How do you then navigate that conversation very judiciously so that you kind of make sure that you're not wasting the fund manager's time, but also then making sure that you're able to extract value from them?
Okay. So it is a transparent discussion. You rightly pointed out, if someone is already being a part of a particular fund in your stage, it is difficult for them to go to the next two rounds. And that's correct. I'm talking about folks who could not make it. So it depends on the ticket sizes. What ticket sizes are they looking at? If they couldn't do a minimum ticket size in an earlier round, are they ready and is the timing right to do the larger ticket size in the next round? And is that a focus at that point for that particular VC or that particular? So angels wouldn't go all that far. At the same time, for the seed stage investors and for the pre-series or series A, I think you need to communicate and be transparent as to what the exit plan would be.
Right.
If they are aligned to the I think the journey is smooth.
But isn't it too early to have an exit conversation, perhaps as a series A or a series B? B, perhaps, yeah, you can, you know, I've seen funds analyze and think about revenue multiples and try and compare it to, you know, in India, there are very few use cases, I guess, in the edtech space that you can talk about, given how nascent our market is, but maybe comparable to companies out in the West. But even then, exit scenarios from an alignment perspective may not be, I mean, from a timing perspective, do you think these conversations are held or is it too early to have them in your opinion?
So for in my case, definitely not for Series A and B because we've just done a Series B. So that will not be applicable. I'll still be having those maybe sometime in future. But for the pre-series or the pre-seed and the seed, those are the conversations.
Got it. Okay, you're talking about secondary exits for the funds that are... Okay. That makes more sense.
Okay.
That's a very interesting point that you made in terms of where the alignment comes in and how they can actually make back those returns so that they can also think about future fundraisers as fund manager from a fund manager perspective. That's a good point that you made. Now I wanted to also talk about your Series A and B, right? Because this is at Series A, you've obviously cracked the product market fit. You're seeing growth. You're looking at to raise capital to provide you the right amount of momentum to get you and scale as quickly and as fast as possible. Now, what prompted your Series A? Was it the fact that it was COVID and there was massive growth that was that you saw and there was an opportunity for you to go out and grab a larger market share? Or was it just the fact that there was demand organically growing from a perspective of things that you alluded to before, which was, you know, you're getting organic growth coming in from the existing clients that you were working with, or the fact that there were new initiatives that the team was thinking about? What prompted Series A? I wanted to understand that because, again, a lot of founders, when they're thinking about when to raise money, they're looking at cash burn. They're looking at amount of money that's left behind. They're thinking about the reserves. They're thinking about the resources. They're thinking about talent. They're looking at demand. There's a whole lot that's part of the whole business plan that they're thinking about in terms of raising capital. When did Series A conversations take place from both a business standpoint as well as a need standpoint?
So interesting one, Akash. It's a mixture of the first two reasons, and I'll tell you why, how it worked. So 2019, when we took the pivot, we did about 35 institutions. Mm-hmm. What we were looking at was a growth of 2x or 3x because it was just the four of us and a few other folks with us. So the institutions that we were doing month on month, 30, 40, 50, 100, 200 is what we were looking at. February and March, when COVID hit in, the demand, the growth was steep. So it was about institutions, more than 500, 600 institutions reaching out to us, and we were onboarding them. And there were a lot more which we could not onboard which we could not work with directly. That was a point in the first quarter itself for 2020 when we realized that we need funds to support the demand that we are seeing in the market right now. And that was, I think, the origination of why we started the Series A talks. I think July is when we finished with it.
Okay. And what about Series B? Similar question. When did you start thinking about Series B? And before you answer that question, I also want to understand what role did the investors from Series A to B play? I wanted to really understand that value add that was brought on very consciously from the investors that you brought on to Series A, and how did that change your fundraising strategy for B?
Great. So product fit and growth, those were the two areas that we were looking at in July in 2020. That once we achieved that, which means with the funds that we had, the product fit and the growth elements were solved in terms of deployment. Now what we were looking at, now if I think in hindsight, it was never an easy journey, but at the same time, scaling was a place that we knew after a year or two, the amount of institutions that we have with us, scale would be the focus in the next 2 years. And that is a time after the Series A, we were sure that within 1 and 1.5 year, we would need funds to scale because we would have solved the product market fit and the growth problem. So we knew that what we were unable to place at that time was the exact timeline. It moved by a quarter or so, but we knew that scale would be the challenge for the next year. Having said that, with the folks who came on with the Series A, multiple folks, we started having discussions on the same areas of guidance when it comes to product, because the market fit was done. And when it comes to growth, what is it that will take us ahead? So it's the same answer everywhere, I believe. It is what you can do with your technology and with your products, because that is what would go to reduce the costs and which would help you acquire the users at a lower cost. Once you are able to solve that, what that means for us is creating a new software, which I was explaining, a simple payment button at the page of every school and college, and you just click there to pay fees. So once you were able to solve that, we were able to get deeper connects through the Series A folks. And then we started to large VCs with larger ticket sizes. That's where the discussion started. That's where Avishkar came in. That's where QED came in, and Arden and all the other folks. The discussions did take us a while. An important question as to what we would need to scale, how we would do it, them helping us. And that is how we found that we are all aligned with these folks who came in, and we are happy that it turned out to be true.
That's fantastic. I mean, knowing that, you know, when and why you started your fundraising journeys, both at A and B, as well as the fact that the investors who came along in both those journeys and how selective you were, kind of goes to show that this has been a very thought out process internally as well, directly correlating to what the business and the business needs were and how the team was thinking about the future and the growth as well. Now, I have one final question for you, and I think this is a very pertinent question, which I think a lot of which a lot of founders go through when they're fundraising. My question to you is, what is the capital required versus why now? And how do both those questions kind of tie into one another while you're fundraising?
Okay. Thanks for that, Akash. So the way I look at things and the way the four of us look at things is very simple. Fundraising, the thought process is a continuous activity. You can't stop thinking about it. Right. When I say that, there are processes which always keep on adjusting to the market and the time and the need. Having said that, how should one answer the question of the amount and the time? According to me, one crucial parameter to look at it is not the amount of customers that you're acquiring, but the rate at which you're acquiring those customers.
Hmm.
If the rate at which you're acquiring customers, you see a sharp inclination there, and then understanding, can your company support that rate? That's right. One parameter. And the second parameter is, if you see a decline in the rate, that decline can be because of a competition, market, or other players entering in. How can you get back to the same?
Mm-hmm.
So these two parameters on the differential of acquisition of customers, it is what defines when you need those funds.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're able to get those funds in time, that's great. If you're unable to get those funds in time, it leads to a drop or a loss in acquisition of certain customers and the market share.
I have a follow-up question for you there. How much investor pressure is then put on you, especially when there are incumbents who are either pivoting towards a very similar model, or you have new companies coming and going after the same market? And given the fact that this has been such a hot sector in the last couple of years, fintech, education, you're at the intersection of both, what role do some of your investors, perhaps at Series A or B, maybe you'll start feeling it now, especially as, you know, there's more pressure heading towards a Series C. And how does that really impact the fundraise process? Sometimes I've heard founders come and talk to us and say, hey, We're starting our round slightly sooner because we have a little bit of investor pressure because we're seeing momentum, and it's good pressure. It's pressure that's challenging us to like go in the right direction because we feel we can go out and get a better market share, and we're obviously doing the right things, and our investors feel we got to be pushing much faster, and that perhaps means investing in the right resources. So has that happened in your case, and how much of that influence is then transferred over to the fundraising process?
Not completely, but yes, past two quarters is the time when we are seeing that pressure. That is a good thing, first of all, because it is helping us achieve or rather leapfrog.
Yeah.
That is what we are looking at now. Because if we are looking at scale, we cannot look at it in a linear manner. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So leapfrog, and that is what we are looking at right now. Having said that, we have divided it into two. Fundraising amount and the pressure that we are ensuring doesn't fall to the product and the performance.
Mm-hmm.
So what do I mean when I say that? So we already know how we want to do it. We have incumbents, we have competition, and we have our strategy in place. So we know with the set of institutions, and yes, FinancePeer as of today is the largest in the market, but how do we do more?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the same teams that we've pointed so far, the product, the customer success, how do we keep on adding more value? Or rather, simply put, can we be the SAP for all our clients?
Right.
Okay. So we have our strategy in place. There are multiple things there. And at the same side, the healthy pressure helps us achieve it faster.
Mm-hmm.
So we have separated the two, product and business versus the timing of investments. So once we are doing fair, if we see movement in terms of differential, if we are doing better, then we are on a better track. If we see that the incumbents and competition is being able to affect this angle of business and product, that is a time when we will have to align the two and understand how soon do we need it, the next series or a funding.
That's a fantastic point. And I guess, you know, as a company that's raised Series B funding, very few companies actually get to that stage, especially when you take a look at it from an India perspective as well. Now, a lot of companies end up raising seed, a lot of companies end up raising Series A, but very few companies end up going to raise Series B, and very few even beyond that. Now, as you're looking into the future, what is the vision for FinancePeer, and where does it plan to be, say, 24 months from now, which is typically when you'll perhaps be inching closer towards perhaps your C or even towards your D?
Okay. So Akash, we have a very simple vision for every student and every parent in the country. We want to make quality education accessible for them. Mm-hmm. And we want their life to be rewarding. So every student, like all of us, they are able to achieve what they want to achieve in life. And we want to be the supporting pillar. That's what we always will aim to achieve. And as a company, we want to, what we have learned from our background, we want to do it using technology and the software that we have.
That's fantastic. And it's obviously a company with a mission that is, has a massive impact on the country, on the education system, on the economy. So I wish you all the luck in terms of building this out. I would love to sit down with you, you know, at a later stage as well, and perhaps talk to you about the whole journey that has come about between B and perhaps C or D. Hopefully, you know, if the company happens to be raising that amount of capital between our next conversation and between this conversation and the next one. So congratulations on everything that you've done. Fantastic journey that it's been so far. And I look forward to interacting with you in the coming few months, years, and wishing you all the best into the future.
Thanks a lot, Akash. As I said, the pleasure is mine, and look forward to interacting with you very soon.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode, and it was another one filled with great insights about fundraising and everything that has to do with deploying capital and maintaining relationships with investors. I think Suni did a fantastic job in sharing insights into their own fundraising journey, and more importantly, how they've been able to deploy the capital over the course of the last 2.5 years. I hope there were key insights in that episode that you can take away with you, and more importantly, implement it in your own fundraising journey. If you're like me and you enjoyed this episode and all the other ones that we've been bringing you so far, please go ahead and rate and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. It really helps others discover the show and, more importantly, keeps you informed about every episode that we release here on the show. We've got another fantastic guest joining us here on the podcast next week, so make sure you tune back in again to see who we have in store and, more importantly, what insights they have to share with us. Until then, everybody, stay safe and keep hustling.